Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Cosby live on your radio with hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use. This is the broadcast for January 15th in the year of our Lord, 2015, hour 2 at 2. Always the goal, to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio. We use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution of the United States of America as our guide. Never revolution, but always restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Kirk Cosby's with me. Welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Buenos dias. Greetings and salutations. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Thank you, Sam.
His name is Carlos Slim, but his budget certainly is not on Kurt.
Well, yeah, he's rather portly when it comes to his budget.
Finances.
Yeah, and he is, according to the Bloomberg boys, he's made a big purchase. He bought some before, but now they say he doubles his holdings in what's called the New York Times. Now, I guess they say he's the largest investor there. I guess he exercised,
he's got 17%.
Yeah, he exercised some options to acquire 15.9 million shares in the newspaper company. He bought these shares for about $6.36 each. That's half of the, closing price. So, he's getting some bargains, it sounds like. Like you say, 16.8 or almost 17% of the company's Class A shares are owned by Mr. Carlos Slim. They call him the world's second richest person, and he gained these options after he lent the paper $250 million in January of 2009 to help it get through the financial crisis. The loan was already repaid and with interest, and then the gap between the exercise price and the Times share price gives Slim an additional potential profit of about $94 million. It's good to see Mr. Slim, being able to profit. I mean, you'd hate to see the poor guy, on the, homeless in the lines.
Yeah, he made all of his money in a socialist communications backed by the government in Mexico scheme. That's how he got rich, Kurt. Good old Carlos,
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think about it now? You think that the New York Times will start to be very conservative under the guidance of Carlos, Kurt?
Well, I'm sure that, his money isn't going to affect the way that the Times reports things that would be, positive for Mr. Slim. They wouldn't. Media just has bias. They don't have biases. I mean, they simply report things as they are, Sam. I mean, of course they wouldn't change their reporting based on the money that comes into them.
Yeah. So what do you think of it all, Kurt?
I guess they say he's 74 years old. Is a busy man. What I think is just showing you more of the way that the media is purchased. And those of us who feel like, amen, maybe the average American who thinks, I got to stay out of this game. I want my media to be unbiased. I want it to come to me with the who, what, when, where, why, etc. In my opinion, you're kind of asleep at the wheel. And you better realize that if you don't participate support media that at least appears to bring you the who, what, when, where, and why, you're going to get more and more of the controlled media, controlled by, the world elites who... can buy it.
Yeah, and all I'm telling you is I don't think I can buy as much of it as Carlos Slim can, Kurt.
No.
But I'm kind of doing my part,
Yes.
I got more than most, that's for sure. Becky Akers, yes. Well-known anarchist, libertarian, excellent writer, friend of ours, monthly co-host, guest, partner, author, and more. Welcome back to Liberty Roundtable.
Thank you so much, Sam. It's always a pleasure and a privilege.
You're welcome. Did you hear that Carlos Slim buys a huge piece to the New York Times?
No.
Do you know who Carlos Slim is?
I'm not real familiar with him, no.
All right. Carlos Slim is the second richest man in the world. He's very unknown to most folks because he kind of stays out of the limelight. He lives, or I don't know where he lives, but he's a Mexican national. And billionaire Carlos Slim, he made his big fortune in the Mexico telecommunications markets. And he doubles his holdings in the New York Times. He owns 17% of the New York Times now. He gave a big old $250 million loan to the New York Times back in 2009 when they were kind of melting down and it needed a check out of a chunk of change. He became the angel investor for them. They paid that back, and now he's doubling his holdings. And so kind of an interesting twist when an unknown Mexican multi-billionaire doubles his holdings in the New York Times. And we're kind of saying, you know, guys like me might not be able to own as much media as Carlos Slim, but it just shows the importance of having a piece of the media to tell your story, huh?
Well, Sam, my opinion of the New York Times could not be lower. So the only thing I can say is whatever he does there, it's got to be an improvement, because the New York Times is the sorriest excuse for a newspaper I can think of. I actually had a friend who went to work at the New York Times after she graduated from journalism school, and she told me an anecdote one time that explain very much what goes on at the Times, and I've never read a story in it without remembering this. She told me that when they assigned her a piece, a story, she would go out and write the story, research it, interview people, come back with the story. Her editor would read it and say, no, this is not the conclusion you should have reached. We need more government involvement. Go find people who will support the idea that regulation should be covering this. And he would send her back out. Now, she didn't put it that bluntly to me, and she didn't use the words government regulation, but it was between the lines. So anytime I read anything in the New York Times, I remember I'm not reading news, I'm reading propaganda. If Carlos Slim can go in there and instill some journalistic ethics in these people so that they're not just printing propaganda, that would be great. I rather doubt he will, because most people just don't have the moral integrity and courage to undertake a task like this. But since I don't know him, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and hope that the Times improves under his ownership.
Yeah, you know, I'm convinced that he will not do that. In fact, if we would have seen him move to the honest, to the integrity, to the who, what, when, where, why of a story with his loan back in 2009, if he was going to exert some influence, now that he's got more influence, time will tell what's going to happen. But we find that interesting because most folks don't really realize who pulls the puppet strings in the media. And this just kind of proves your friend telling you kind of this just proves they have an agenda-driven news cycle. It isn't about who, what, when, where, why of a story. It isn't about the proper role of limited government, about the free market, about reporting facts as they are. It's about an agenda-driven market to manipulate the minds and hearts of viewers or readers or whatever you want to say, listeners everywhere, depending on the form of media we're discussing. And I find that fascinating. Along with his backdrop of this Charlie Hebdo big old news story. Charlie Hebdo in France is like what The Onion is in the United States. It's virtually a, I would call it a propaganda news service, but what they would say is it's, what is it, Kurt? They would say it's entertainment. They would say it's, what kind of news do they call that? There's a word that I'm looking for here that they call
it. You know, I really would have a hard time describing it. They say it's a magazine that prints, you know, they say it's comedy and I'm trying to remember the phrase. But the bottom line is, in my opinion, it's very much like the New York Times, a questionable area of where to get your news, you know.
Do you know much about this Charlie Hebdo thing, Becky?
Well, I am somewhat familiar with it because I have followed this story for a while. I don't have any respect whatsoever for Charlie Hebdo. They seem to simply mock everyone everywhere, which there's nothing wrong with that as long as you're going to limit yourself to politicians. That's not what they're doing. They mock Catholics, they mock Protestants, they mock Muslims, and there's really no reason for this, okay? I mean, Muslims aren't hurting the people at Charlie Hebdo or didn't used to. It kind of escapes me why you want to go out and mock religions and just offend people to no purpose. Now, I understand if Muslims are trying to impose Sharia law on France. That's not what's going on. They're simply attacking people of faith because they have faith. You know, France has been famously atheistic for a very long time. And if you're going to attack people of faith, you have to prepare for some blowback then. So one of the things I reject totally in this whole scenario is that this has anything to do with censorship. It does not. Charlie Hebdo is not being censored by government. The Muslims who supposedly and allegedly killed people at Charlie Hebdo do not represent any government. In fact, even if they did, let's say the government of Yemen sent them to France to silence Charlie Hebdo, I still question whether that is, properly speaking, censorship, because the only people who can censor, the only people who can take away our rights to free speech, and they can't actually take them away, but the only people who can infringe on our right to free speech are people in government, politicians and bureaucrats. They have the power to infringe on our free speech. Anyone else who does is not in a position to infringe. They can simply intimidate us, but they cannot prevent us from speaking our minds. We may have to pay a price. You know, if I go across the street and I knock on my neighbor's door, and when the guy answers, I say, "Do you know what your mother is?" And I start with a string of profanity and insults, the guy is going to take a swing at me. Okay, but he's not censoring me. He's intimidating me to shut up, as he properly should. Okay, in society, as opposed to government, there are certain things that rational, kind, civilized people do not say to one another. And one of the things we don't do is attack another person's faith and belief. Doesn't mean that every faith is right. That's not what I'm saying at all. It doesn't mean that I think Muslims have a handle on the truth. I don't think they do. It's a false religion. But that doesn't give me the right to go and insult him. And if I do insult a Muslim and he tries to silence me, that is the give and take in society. It has nothing to do with censorship. Censorship is involved only when a government tries to shut down and abridge the right to free speech.
Now, let's be clear. That doesn't mean we're justifying the actions of those who want to silence folks either.
No, I'm not trying to do that. Murder is wrong, no matter who does it, whether a politician does it with his cowardly wars or whether private people do it. However, we should be aware, when we open our big mouths, when we mock someone for the sheer pleasure of destroying him and his reputation, we should be prepared to pay a price for that. And if we think a little bit further, this is actually the sign of a very vigorous society that keeps rude behavior in check. You know, you always have a lot of people who will say, well, without government, how would we do this and how would we do that? And we wouldn't have a civilized society anymore. Yes, we would. Because civilized people realize if you're going to mock another human being, if you are going to subject that person's deeply held beliefs to constant ridicule, eventually you're going to face blowback. Now, usually that blowback would be much, much less severe. If people were tasteful and thoughtful, as they have to be in a free society, they would be boycotting Charlie Hebdo. Okay.
But no, what they're doing is they've got Charlie Hebdo sold out around the world. The word I was looking for, by the way, is called, they call it satirical news, or in other words, satire news. And they say Satire Weekly, hard to get in the USA, is a big old headline in USA Today. And they're saying, hey, you know, this is basically a blockbuster sale. My point about this whole thing is this. When you promote a satirical news rag into the limelight and make it a blockbuster sellout, you almost put these guys above the Holy Grail when it comes to news, and you almost suggest that propaganda news is more important than regular news. And I guess what I'm saying is, to me, when this story's in the mainstream press for weeks on end, and now you have blockbuster sales, and companies in America are hoping to get the next issue of this satirical news, quote, rag that is designed to mock others, make fun of religions, and create cartoons that have violent overtones. And the list goes on and on. At some point, what you're doing, if you're not very careful, is you're going to destroy the real news cycle, and you're going to end up mocking real news. And at some point, people won't know what news is and what news isn't, Becky.
That's also true, but I have a further point to toss into this discussion, and that is I have seen a number of very convincing articles presenting evidence that this whole affair is simply a false flag event on the order of 9/11. So, you know, again, I would just question who's benefiting from all of this. Okay, we've had everyone from the despicable Michael Hyden defending the NSA, calling for further powers of spying overseas, okay, for the NSA, to people in the intelligence, quote, communities in Europe and England echoing that. We need more surveillance of the Internet, okay? I'd ask, who is benefiting so much? In addition to Charlie Hebdo with its sold-out newsstands everywhere, the intelligence community worldwide is benefiting from these constant calls for more surveillance. Let's unpack that just a moment, Sam. It's fascinating to me that anyone in this country can seriously stand there and tell us the NSA needs more power to spy overseas, because let's remember that is precisely what the NSA was founded to do and what it is supposed to be doing currently, okay? People who hate the NSA very seldom ever hate it for its spying overseas, okay? They don't go that extra step and realize that's also unconstitutional. Their concern is that the NSA has turned its power on Americans, okay? That's where the rage against the NSA is.
My concern against the NSA is the sucker should not even exist in the first place.
It should not even exist. But, Sam, you are in a minority of probably less than one half percent to realize that. Most of the NSA's critics, even the most vociferous ones, will freely admit, yes, it should be spying overseas. That's what it was founded to do. It just shouldn't use those powers against Americans. Okay, when you hear defenders of the NSA then saying it needs further powers to spy overseas, oh, no. Beg to differ. It already has those powers, unconstitutional though they are, you're absolutely right, okay? But American law long ago gave it that power. Congress long ago gave it the power to spy overseas.
Yeah, you need to be very clear, though, and say the color of American law, because it's not really American law.
No,
the color of law.
Unconstitutional American law. But
that's
still,
right. When
you hear any of these patsies, any of these stools asking for more power for the NSA to spy overseas, your response is, really? They already have that power. They are too incompetent to have stopped the Charlie Hebdo attack. If it was, in fact, what our governments are telling us it was, I doubt it is. I think it's a false flag. I think it's designed precisely to do what it's done, get everybody stirred up, make everybody terrorized again, make everybody feel like, oh, you're just one mad Muslim away from being blown to kingdom come, and you need your government, and you need the NSA, and you need the intelligence community to spy on you, because you never know when those dastardly foreigners overseas are going to come and just start shooting up a newspaper office.
Or your business. Because Al-Qaeda is right behind your left shoulder. You know that, right?
I'm sorry?
I'm saying, or your business, because you know Al-Qaeda is right behind your left shoulder, right?
Exactly.
And that's part of the propaganda is that, you know, you're always, I don't think you should go outside today, Becky. and see,
yeah,
and they get this fear-mongering going on to the umpth degree. Mix that with propaganda, or they would call it satirical news, and before you know it, it's hard to even know what's real. In fact, your relationships probably aren't real. Becky, what you need is more Facebook relationships. And what you, and pretty soon, it's very, not for you and me, of course, but I'm saying for a lot of people, it's hard to even know what's fact or what's fiction or what's real or what's virtual or what's, and they're creating this complete confusion to where people are just absolutely overwhelmed and disengaged.
Absolutely. And that's part of the plan. Keep us all on tenterhooks. Keep us stirred up. Keep us fearful of each other. So dissension among us so that we turn to them for protection. These people who instigate wars, who declare wars, who kill, who thieve for a living. And we're supposed to trust them to protect us? I don't think so.
Now, it's interesting to me, too, that this has become a collector's item. This Charlie Hebdo latest edition. They're literally calling it the Survivor's Edition. Now, if you can get one of these dudes on eBay for a pretty penny, you can support the families that suffered in the murders, and you can have a piece of history. And I just think, isn't it interesting that we want a French newspaper that prints virtual propaganda or that prints this satirical news, bashing others because of their religion, etc., dividing and conquering people around the world. And what you really need to have that in your American home is a relic of history, something to remember that you were alive and that you got a copy of this. I mean, it's better than a jersey from your favorite football team player, basketball team player, whatever the case may be. It's interesting the things we even collect and that become collector's items and stuff like that. This is hailed as almost like an awesome comeback piece from a propaganda news service. Fascinating discussion about the whole ramifications of all that.
Yeah, I'm not a collector of anything but books, and the urge to pile a bunch of stuff around has never made much sense to me. But as I say, to have something that is deliberately offensive and insulting for no reason other than to deliberately offend and insult just doesn't appeal to me at all.
Anyway, I find the whole thing fascinating. Kurt, do you want to chime in here? Kurt did mention that, hey, we do want free speech, and I agree with that. The problem is what horses we back for our free speech. You know, a guy that...
You know, I don't...
Go ahead, Kurt.
I just don't know for sure what else to add to the discussion.
All right, for example, I believe people have the right to say what they want to say. And a guy that throws out F-bombs, I think he has every right to say that if he wants to. I disagree with him, but that's not the horse I would pick to back for my free speech guy. And I wouldn't pick a satirical or a satirical news service that feeds on propaganda and feeds on division and feeds on violence and mocking and manipulation and dividing. I wouldn't use that for my free speech token or my... And that's what's being done here, and that's what I find fascinating is... You know, on one hand, they want to say, Sam, you don't have any credentials. You're not a journalist. You don't have any authority or right to report the news. You're a nobody in the news media because you're not a journalist. You got to have credentials. You got what broadcasting school did you attend? What? And they want to go on like that on one hand. On the other hand, they want to allow these satirical news services to become basically top dog, sold out worldwide news. Why would the news media around the world, and especially in America, when they want to tell people that Becky and Sam and Kurt don't have any real right to report the news because they're not, quote, properly credentialed, at the same time you're going to back a satirical news service like this and put it above reproach virtually as a free speech token of honor? I find that fascinating. Becky Akers with us on your radio.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R-word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool Radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
From the days of the Romans, there have been legends of a fountain of youth, and now science has found a real answer to slowing the aging process. I'm Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and it's so exciting to know that Time Challenger has capitalized on decades worth of international scientific studies to bring you the most powerful mitochondrial DNA supplement on the market today. Mitochondrial DNA is the power plant of human cells, but as we age, we lose more and more of this precious material. Time Challenger promotes healing and gives cells the power to do their work. Mental cognition may be enhanced, skin refreshed, blood pressure normalized, and signs of aging might be reduced. Time Challenger can also provide enhanced recovery for athletes. Time Challenger, the first step to slow the effects of aging on your body. To learn more, call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. Time Challenger just might be your fountain of youth.
A backpack is more than just a bag, it's a statement. Whether you're a student or a professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, back with you live. Sam Bushman, Kirk Cosby, Becky Akers live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use always. So while the American people are trying to get this, quote, latest relic, I'm calling it propaganda magazine, Charlie Hebdo, is it a false flag operation? Good, honest, wise people are asking that very question. While the mainstream press seems to back them as if they're in a legitimate news service, never mind the reality that they're satirical news at best, propaganda news for sure. They want to run around and act like you and I don't have any credentials to report the news, and what are we even doing in the news media and all this kind of stuff. I find all that just fascinating. While that's going on, though, there is a story that I wish made it to the mainstream press. And this story's fascinating because it did reach my news service, Deseret News. But I don't think most of America heard about this story. And in my opinion, this story is 10 times more important than Charlie Hebdo ever was. And that story is this. Headline: Cedar City, that's Cedar City, Utah, Cedar City landowners score victory over prairie dogs. Now, Kurt always makes fun of the prairie dogs because it's like left-handed prairie dogs seem to have more rights in America than people do. But in the Deseret News, it says this: Dateline Salt Lake City, a federal judge ruled that the government cannot extend protections for the Utah prairie dog to private property, reasoning that, hey, this has little bearing on the schema of the Endangered Species Act. Anyway, it invalidates a controversial and widely locally disparaged 2012 executive action that forbade any taking of the, quote, prairie dog of the animal or its habitat, even if that action occurred on private property. Now, Jonathan Wood argued the case on behalf of impacted Iron County residents and said the ruling is a huge victory. This is a serious property rights win against the environmentalists, against the belligerent, out-of-control federal government. And under the ruling, these families are going to be able to pursue building their dream homes and start their businesses. And most importantly, hey, the kids can play and the airport can continue and the cemetery can continue. And hey, you won't have prairie dogs taking over this town. They're calling it a huge win. Again, it's a property rights discussion, but a judge stands up for what's right and you get virtually no press on it, Becky.
Of course you don't, because it's a victory for freedom, a very limited victory. I mean, this shouldn't even be something that's under discussion. The rights of private property should be sacrosanct. Instead, what we have had throughout the 20th century and late 19th century and now in the 21st century is a constant attack on private property. One of the reasons that government is out to attack private property and why progressives and communists are always attacking private property is it is such a bulwark against government.
On one hand, it's a tiny victory. You're absolutely right. But listen to the wording by this judge here that I find just absolutely riveting. In his ruling, the judge said the Commerce Clause does not, I repeat, does not give the government carte blanche authority to regulate everything. And referencing another federal judge's words, said that it's no longer the, hey, you can do anything you feel like government. Can't do that. The issue of killing or harassing prairie dogs has to be weighed for its impact on interstate commerce, not whether the rule prohibiting the killing has such an effect. In other words, you just can't use this Commerce Clause to say or do anything you want to, federal government. You're out of control. And one judge even quotes another judge in that statement and doubles down and says, hey, this doesn't give you, federal government, the authority to do whatever you want at all. Now, when you see judges start to say that, we're starting to create some case precedent that if we wisely bring it up and use it, could benefit us. They say Congress just cannot use the Commerce Clause to claim anything they want to. They can't claim anything that might affect the ecosystem. They can't just say whatever they want to say or do whatever they want to do. There's laws against that. There's freedoms. Anyway, the judge added that there's no evidence that shows that a decrease in, quote, prairie dog populations would significantly impact the supply or quality of animals. Anyway, very interesting statements from the judge here about saying the federal government's just out of control. Anyway, now the battle's on if the ruling will stand. What do you think, Becky?
I'm cautiously optimistic. Here's the problem. Our Constitution is a document. It is only as active as the country's belief in liberty is, okay? A document does not defend itself. A document, when the government transgresses it, cannot rise up and put the government back in its place. We have a judge standing up and saying, here's what the document says. But opposing this man, we have numerous judges, an army of judges, and far worse, most Americans saying, no. Now, I don't like that. I want to be in control of other people's property, and the Constitution be damned. I'll do as I please. You have a great many Americans who have rushed to buy Obamacare, okay, at your expense. You're subsidizing them. Do you think these people care a fig what the Constitution says about your right to keep your money? No, of course not. All they care about is, can I override the Constitution to get a free ride at your expense? Okay, that's why when we have an anomaly of a judge or a politician like Ron Paul, or perhaps a bureaucrat like Ed Snowden used to be, okay, standing up and saying, wait, we've gone too far, this is unconstitutional, Yes, it's newsworthy, and it's worthy of our admiration and praise, but we have to understand that doesn't win the battle for liberty, okay? The battle for liberty, as the founding generation understood, is fought in the hearts and minds of the people. When most people want liberty, we'll be free. When most people are convinced that government should take care of them, government should use its guns to rob me and you to pay for them, liberty is going to be lost, even if here and there a few brave people stand up for her. So, Sam, that's why I say I'm cautiously optimistic. It's a good sign that a federal judge is standing up for a small amount of freedom, but opposing him is a whole army of folks who want slavery.
And that's why I think it's so critical that we, the people in the media, have the opportunity to say the new media takes center stage. He who owns the media makes the rules. He who owns the media really has the ability to virtually control the hearts and minds of people if they're for tyranny, and or liberate the hearts and minds of people for liberty if they believe in freedom. And that's why I say, hey, if we let people know that this judge stood for what was right, we can hopefully have that duplicated. This judge quoted the words of another judge. The more Americans hear about these truths and hear about people standing up, the more Americans hear about the good news of America and the positive answers, the better off we are. So many of our stories create alarm bells to say, look out, folks. And other stories say we need a whole lot more of this. I'll give you another example and an opposite story to make your point, by the way. Headline says, off the charts. Government shows growth after years of shrinking. Floyd Morris brings the piece to us. The government, quote, is growing finely, he says. Preliminary figures on the size of the United States economy indicate that for the first three quarters of 2014, the government now grew at an annual rate of, let's see, what percent is this? 1.8% after adjusted inflation. So in this news story, in my opinion, he's using his control of the media to say, finally, government's growing. This is great news. This is awesome. It's nonetheless a milestone. It might not be as much rapid growth as we want, but it's good. And we hope government does not shrink significantly. And they go on and on. See, this is nothing but a propaganda piece to promote the agenda that you're so worried about, Becky, and I concur. And we in the media need to change that narrative.
We do, Sam, but again, we're facing the same problem as the judge you cited. You know, there are a handful of us. The alternative media on the Internet, I often hear it touted as an answer to corporate media. However, let's be clear that the alternative media on the Internet, much of it is also progressive and communistic. Okay, so you have an alternative media on the web that is growing more and more influential, that is countering the corporate mainstream media. That's great. But again, we have the corporate media's message put out by the alternative media, many of them on the Internet. I'm thinking of places like Alternet. Okay, if you've never been to Alternet's website and you want a very good laugh, go there, because it's like the New York Times on steroids. It's just ludicrous, the stuff that these progressives put out. But let's remember, when we're talking about the alternative media, that's what we're up against. So, Sam, you and I and Kurt can sit here all day and propound liberty, but we have to realize that a lot of people are listening to the progressive versions of us as well. So
there's no question about that. My only response to that is I can't fix the world by 3 o'clock, as a buddy of mine used to say. I can only do what's within my power and my authority. And if I can leave a legacy of freedom, and I can educate, and I can inform, and I can stand for what's right, and I can provide leadership, and I can do what I can do, then it's kind of like me going to a campsite. I can leave it a little cleaner, a little better than I found it. It won't make the world free of trash, but I can only do what I have influence over and or control and involvement into the best of my ability, and teach others and set the example and point the way and do what I can do. And other than that, there's not a whole lot I can do about it, right?
Well, I was going to add that this is why your listeners are so very important, why my readers are so very important. These are the folks who amplify the message that we're sending out there. If you are listening to the program right now, you need to get out there and tell your friends and family who aren't, who will never tune Sam in, who don't even have radios. You need to get out there and explain to them why liberty is better than slavery every day of the week. You need to explain to them why Medicare is unconstitutional. And after listening to Sam, you'll have a lot of ammunition as to why that's the case. You need to tell them why public education is unconstitutional and extremely unhealthy for their children. After listening to Sam, again, you have a lot of bullet points that you can spread. But I always tell, you know, I'll have a lot of readers who write to me, Sam, and they'll say, oh, well, it's so great that you have this podium and this platform that you can preach liberty. No, because I'm largely preaching, and you are too, Sam, to folks who already agree with us. Now, every once in a while, somebody will write me, yes, and, oh, I used to think this way, but now I've been reading, and you make so much sense, blah, blah, blah. That's great. But by and large, the people who read my stuff and the people who tune into your station, Sam, already agree with this. It is you folks who are the indispensable link here. You go to your friends and family who will never read a word I write and never listen to a word Sam says, and you explain to them why liberty is so morally superior to slavery. They'll listen to you. You have influence with them that neither Sam nor I will ever have. You are the ones who are so crucial in the battle for freedom.
And I believe a lot of people listening to us agree with us, but I think a lot of people listening to us, Becky, might have the inkling of freedom. I might call it the freedom bone, if you will. They might have the desire for freedom. They might believe in a lot of what we say. But many of them grew up in a propaganda society of media, plus a communist thugocracy in terms of their education. And so they've had this steady diet of a mixture between socialism and fascism and communism and basically raised and educated to be virtually a slave, not a freedom-loving American like we would hope them to be, raised on fiat currency, raised on get something for nothing, raised on have what you want now, never wait and delay your gratification for anything. And so they've been raised in this abusive, hostile environment for so long. Their freedom bone or their desire for freedom, this inkling, lets them listen to us. But what they need is they need to unlearn all that they've been taught their whole life, and they need to relearn the principles of liberty from the ground up. And it's a very difficult process. And I think the longer you and I are at it, the more knowledge we have and the ability we to articulate ourselves increase, etc. A lot of these people, though, they need a grounding, and that's part of one of the things that Liberty Roundtable provides. Is we provide a grounding in new issue comes up tomorrow, whatever it be. How do you ferret out the truth? How do you learn the who, what, when, where, why? How do you make sure that you have a solid liberty-based stance on that issue? How do you know how you would feel about that issue from a founding father-esque point of view? How do you look at it from a God, family, and country, a protection of life, liberty, property point of view? How do you look at it as a free man, a free woman should, as opposed to a controlled slave propagandized your whole life? And so I think really what we're providing is an education on the radio for those who want that education. And it will be the few and far between. There's no question about it.
You know, Sam, I agree with you. And I've tried to do the same thing in the two novels I've written about the American Revolution. I urge readers to buy these novels and give them to family and friends, because my novels will present the philosophy of liberty in an entertaining manner. They're not preachy, they're just regular novels, but underlying them, just like underlying John Steinbeck's novels is the communist philosophy, underlying my novels is the freedom philosophy. And I'm also offering a sale today, Sam, to all your listeners. You can get my two novels for the price of one. You just simply go to Amazon, type in my name, Becky Akers, A-K-E-R-S, and both Hailstorm and Abducting Arnold should pop up. They're both half price today for your audience. So I encourage anyone who wants an easy way to present freedom to your friends and family, buy a copy, share it around, show people, say, look, you know what the founding fathers went through to give us this country, and here's a story about Nathan Hale, and here's a book about Benedict Arnold and why he's not actually the traitor everyone thinks. But absolutely, Sam, that all we can do is try to educate people and try to get the freedom message out there.
And it's a road to hoe, and you can be tempted by the adversary and others to believe it's a fruitless cause. And to some degree, you know, hey, we got a lot against us. However, my response isn't to solve everything myself. I can't. What I can do is raise, well, let me give you just a couple of quick examples. I've got 8 children that have been taught the principles of liberty. So it started out with me, and then I met a liberty-loving female, and we got married, and then the two of us became, well, we had 8 kids, and now there's 10 of us, and now they're getting married, and the list grows. Well, we've raised our children, and we haven't put them in government education at all, and if it's about 10 grand a year per kid in government education, it's about, you know, if they're in school for 13 years, it's like $130,000 a kid for government school, not counting interest or anything else. And when you times that plus 8, me and my little old wife have saved the government well over $1 million. And most importantly, we've saved the hearts and minds of our children. And now we've got 10 of us running around battling for liberty. And you know, I can't do everything myself, but I can have a tremendous impact. And by little things, says the Almighty, great things shall be accomplished. And so I don't really need to worry about all the things that I cannot do and the negative and the freight train that's coming. And I don't need to get involved in that fear and that panic. What I need to do is what I'm doing. Little old Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby started out, bought a radio station, learned how it worked by hard knocks, sold that station. I started a nationally syndicated talk show that eventually evolved into a nationally syndicated radio network. Now we syndicate multiple shows. And so me and my wife saved $1 million, and we didn't have to spend that on government education. But, hey, our children have not been propagandized and abused. They understand the principles of liberty. And so it starts with that. And on one hand, it sounds teeny. But when you really look at the totality of what's been accomplished, it's beyond imagination. Literally millions of people can listen to Liberty Roundtable Live on our other talk shows and be educated in the principles of freedom by example, by hard work, by blood, sweat, and tears. And we may not be giving up our fame and our fortune and our sacred honor as the founders are, but we're certainly putting a foot forward for liberty. And Kurt, you want to add to that? I think it's by small things, great things can be accomplished, really. And my goal isn't to tell how valuable my efforts are, but to show how tiny efforts make a big difference.
You know, the thing I love to do is point out solutions, because typically in the world that we live in, especially in the media world, the phrase "if it bleeds, it leads" is typically the way it works. So in other words, you know, a shooting goes on or a killing or whatever, then that's the big news. And yet the real solutions, the real answers that we need lie in true founded, you know, real solutions that are brought forward by typically not too much bleeding, not too much of that, and yet by hardworking individuals that are typically in the fight day in and day out. You know, folks like Becky Akers, folks like Sheriff Mack, and others that we, at least in my opinion, are lucky enough to have on the program with us, so then we can learn from them and I guess you could say, hopefully be part of the solution.
Gerald Celente says a global economic collapse is coming. Becky, do you think he's right?
I don't know, Sam. I go back and forth on that. So many people have predicted collapses every year that I've been following that kind of news that I'm getting rather jaundiced about it all. I will say that the United States is following the same trajectory as earlier dictatorships, such as Nazi Germany or the Soviet Union. The economic world that the United States has created cannot last. It's just violating so many fundamental economic principles. It's got to fall sooner or later. Will it be this year? If Gerald Celente feels confident it will be, I am not nearly the economist he is. I put more faith in his prognostication than I would my own, but at the same point, I balance that against all the other calls for collapse I've heard over the last decade.
Here's my response. I think eventually we know that fiat money systems always fail. Okay, so historically, the reality is it's going to fail. The problem that I have is my whole lifetime I've heard the failing's just right around the corner. It's going to happen tomorrow. You better prepare. There's not really a whole lot I can do to prepare if an economic collapse happens tomorrow. What I can do is get a little bit of food. In other words, a little bit of bullets, beans, and band-aids to take care of my family. Preparedness is good. Staying out of debt's great. I can learn to live slim so that when it happens, it doesn't affect me as much. I mean, there's some things that I can do for preparedness, which I support preparedness. What I don't support is that panic that, you know what, the sky is always falling idea. when it doesn't happen or when people predict timing, they 9 times out of 10 or more get schnookered and look foolish. And so I'm not saying it's never going to happen, but I am saying I'm not going to run around as if it's happening because it doesn't do me any good. Preparedness and education and working towards solutions and protecting your family is the answer. And if it really happens, if we really have a real economic collapse, I don't know what preparedness you can really do to prevent the abuse and the toll that it's going to take on your family anyway, Becky.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of this gets back to what faith you have in God. I'm going to trust the Lord to protect me. He's promised he will. You know, we have to take sensible precautions, and I agree with everything you said, Sam, about living slim and being sure that you're not in debt and all that kind of stuff, laying in supplies. But after that, really, our fate is in the hands of the Lord, and we need to trust him and pray to him. I pray every single day he will abolish this wicked, evil government. He will bring it to its knees. We're assured in Psalm 2 that he laughs at the nations. He laughs at their pretensions to control us. And so I just pray to him every day and say, Lord, deal with these wicked politicians and bureaucrats who are seeking to enslave us. Abolish them, bring them all to their knees, and let us triumph over them in freedom.
And I find it fascinating how people entrench and build property and do this and that so that when it comes, they're safe. But you know what? All it would take is the right person to either, one, take over their property and control it, and or force them to leave it, and then none of that preparedness has a lot of value. I think spiritual preparedness needs to be first, as you wisely point out, and I think the solutions lie in living as God wants you to live, and in that comes the greatest protection. That doesn't mean do nothing and trusting God to solve all your problems, but it does mean that we don't trust in the arm of flesh, that we do trust in God, and we do our very best to live frugally and keep his commandments and do those things that are going to give us the greatest protection. And then, hey, as you can, preparedness is always a good idea. But I'm telling you right now, the guy that has $1 million to prepare, the guy that's got $5 to prepare, I'm not so sure the $1 million guy is going to be a whole lot better off when the real troubles will start. And so, you know, whether you're forced to leave what you've prepared for or forced to somebody else takes it over or whatever the case may be, we need to be very careful that we don't just trust in our, quote, preparedness plans as if it's all up to us. Because I don't believe that it is. I think there's a mixture. We do all we can and then trust in God for the real plan, huh?
Absolutely. Amen to that.
All right. Where do people get your books, Becky? Give the books out again and where to get them.
Get on Amazon. They're on sale today, 2 for the price of 1. Enter my name, Becky Akers, A-K-E-R-S, in the search engine on Amazon, and it'll take you right to both Hailstorm and Abducting Arnold.
Godspeed, ma'am. We'll talk soon.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure and a privilege.
There she goes. Becky Akers doing a great job. Ladies and gentlemen, we all agree that, you know what? Obedience to God's commandments is the solution. It really is. That and a proper understanding of liberty and how to protect and defend it. That's for sure. All right, for Sam and Kurt, thanks for being alongside for the ride. If you want to chip in some financial support, we'd love it. LibertyRoundtable.com. Every penny helps us grow. New media taking center stage, and you can be part of the solutions today. For Sam and Kurt, we declare we the people, along with the grace of the Almighty, we can and will restore America. LibertyRoundtable.com. You going to help? Thanks.